Hello, and welcome to the Logistics Management Podcast Series. My name's Jeff Berman. I'm Group News Editor for Logistics Management Magazine and the Peerless Media Supply Chain Group. Today, it's a real pleasure to welcome Michael Farlekas to our podcast. Michael serves as President and CEO of E2Open. Michael joined E2Open in 2015 as CEO. In this role, he's responsible for leading the company's overall operations with direct oversight of sales, marketing, professional services, research and development, and also strategy. Michael brings to E2Open more than 20 years of sales, marketing, and leadership experience in supply chain management and enterprise software. Prior to joining E2Open, he was the VP and General Manager at RoadNet Technologies, which is now OmniTrax, a leading provider of last-mile routing and mobility solutions for Fortune 50 clients. He also spent 11 years at Red Prairie, which is now JDA Software, in roles that included Senior Vice President and General Manager of the Industrial Business Unit, as well as VP Industrial Sales. He's also held senior leadership positions at GATX Terminal Corp, now Kinder Morgan, which is an operator of petroleum and chemical distribution terminals worldwide, and CSX Transportation, a Class 1 rail transportation provider offering comprehensive supply chain services. Michael has an MBA with a concentration in international business from Jacksonville University and a bachelor of science degree in mechanical engineering from Fairleigh Dickinson University in New Jersey. Michael, thanks for joining us today.
Oh, thanks a lot, Jeff. That's like a walk down memory lane. That's quite an introduction you gave me. It reminded me of all those experiences. So
there you go. No, very well balanced and a very cool looking background, to say the least. So, Michael, to make the best most of our time, just if you could give me quickly just the elevator pitch of E2Open for those that are listening and may not be familiar with you guys, just in terms of a quick overview, basic services, basic verticals you serve, things like that.
Yeah, thanks. Well, thank your audience for attending and paying and listening today. Yeah, E2Open is a cloud-based supply chain software platform. We focus on really large scale clients across all sectors of retail manufacturing. And we focus on large global companies at scale. Our platform is built upon a network. And that's really important in how goods are made and sold and brought to market today, is most of that activity is outsourced to third parties, contract manufacturers, suppliers, transportation providers, 3PLs, 4PLs, and even, it'd be interesting to think about this, that companies don't really sell products themselves anymore. They either sell them through the channel or they sell them through retailers. So our platform is built upon a network of 420,000 connected parties across all those activities. And we are a live platform, meaning we connect all of these companies together in an ecosystem for the brand owner or shipper to allow them to run their supply chains more effectively with less inventory, less people, and less expedites. And we do that from an end-to-end perspective. So you think about a large-scale manufacturer, we help them connect and collaborate on the supply side and manufacturing across all their insourced and outsourced manufacturing. Bring product together, help them plan in terms of forecasting demand and sensing demand, and then plan their supply, and then help with global trade, logistics, and then managing their retailer and channel partners. So we're an end-to-end platform focused on the world's biggest companies, most complex supply chains, and we're built upon a network. So that's what we do. We've been kind of at this now for about 20 years, so we've got the longest standing cloud-based supply chain software company, I believe, and as they told me in the original days, it was like a server in a closet. That was their cloud before the cloud was even a cloud. So
yeah,
glad to be here today.
No, that's great. That's great. Thank you. And given sort of your exposure into different markets, different modes, Michael, I thought we could sort of start at a top level, just in terms of when we look at the freight economy, in the sense that there's all these different moving parts. We still have high inflation, although it's going down. Imports into the U.S. are lower, double-digit decreases year on year, but I guess the gaps are getting less worse as we work our way through 2023. And there's still the inventory overhang. Those are just a few things at top of mind when I think of the freight economy. And of course, also the talk of, are we not in a freight recession? there's a lot there to unfold, if you will. Yeah. But why don't we sort of start with that, and then we can jump around from there.
Yeah, listen, this is all reverberations of the experience, unfortunate experience we all had with COVID, where consumer behavior changed dramatically, in the beginning and through the middle of COVID. And then now it changed dramatically back to something that looks like a more normal situation. And as the economy spooled up to address, people's changing of behavior, and by that I mean a lot less spend on discretionary spend on activities and services. Obviously, you couldn't travel, couldn't go to, ball games, couldn't spend time with your family. So people spent a lot of time thinking about how they wanted to buy hard goods and things to make their homes better. And that kind of ended in dramatic fashion last April. And we saw that in our transportation numbers. We do a fair amount of bookings of ocean freight, and we saw that drop precipitously. And the economy just went the other way, which is spending a lot less money on buying, hard goods, and then also, spending more time with their families, et cetera. So this is all just kind of a normalization of a dramatic change to our economy. And that shows up in, container freights coming to the U.S. because it's mostly hard goods oriented, durable goods. You see that in transportation and sort of spot markets versus, contracted rates, as you had a lot of entrants into the trucking business when demand got very high. And, this will all work itself out and normalize, I think over to set next, about 2 quarters ago, I was talking about 9 to 12 months. I think now we're probably, 6 to 9 months away from everything kind of getting normalized.
All right, great. And then, to jump back to the imports for a second, seeing how those imports have been on the decline coming into the U.S., especially on the West Coast. That's obviously led to sort of this shift to East in Gulf Coast ports, whose numbers have seen some gains. How do you sort of view all that? Do you view that as more of a temporary thing, given the sort of the labor unrest that's still happening between the maritime terminals and the union, the dock workers, the PMA and ILWU, that is?
Yeah.
Is there something else at play here?
I don't think so. I mean, companies will evaluate how they bring products into our country. There's only a fixed number of ports that you can bring product through, especially on the container side. And companies will always evaluate their total landed cost, and then they'll evaluate the variability of getting their products to either their supply points or manufacturing points to their customers. So I think it'll be this way for a while, as companies have figured out that maybe the total landed cost coming over to East is going to be slightly favorable, and I don't have to worry about so many of the issues and disruptions and congestion on the West Coast ports. Okay. I don't think any of that's permanent in nature, but when you have customers change behavior, then obviously people tend to say, okay, well, this kind of works for me, and maybe doesn't change back right away. But I think over the long term, companies will evaluate their total landed cost in terms of all of the things associated with transit times, variability, hard costs, and they'll adjust. And they'll adjust that based on, what the cost structure looks like.
Okay. And speaking of transit times, we come across a statistic indicating that it's taking roughly an average of 59 days from shipments to get from Asia to North America, which is down 11 days on a quarter-to-quarter basis. It seems pretty significant, but I guess when you factor in a lot of the things that are going on, coupled with a somewhat lower consumer demand in some cases, as many people shift to services spending, maybe it's a little bit easier to comprehend. What's your take on that decline in the transit times?
I think it's just a function of the less demand, and having a little bit more streamlined operations that are more back to normal. I think what companies really key in on isn't so much the transit times, it's more lead time variability, meaning that's 60 days, 70 days. Okay, I can understand that it translates obviously to inventory carrying costs. But from practitioners will think more about how consistent is that 60 days? How can I rely on that? Is that going to be 60 days and then jump up for one shipment that's going to be, you know, an anomaly. So I think companies are, you know, I think that's also settling out, by the way, in terms of lead time variability being more consistent and less disruptions. We'll have to see what's going to happen on the West Coast if that contributes to some congestion and then more lead time variability. But our clients would talk about lead time variability as kind of a key indicator rather than just transit times, because that obviously affects how the, you know, they can count on products being where they should be when they expect them to be there.
Okay. All right. Great. Great. And let's sort of shift gears to, obviously, it is China, it is Asia related too, but in terms of sourcing, obviously COVID has driven a lot of conversations about companies thinking more about producing domestically, the domestic supply chain, easier transportation processes, not having to deal with international snags, if you will. You know, do you think that, or the whole concept of nearshoring, reshoring, maybe us focusing more on North America for production, sourcing, distribution, for everything, do you think that has real potential, or is it still a little bit more forward thinking?
I think there is potential, but I think the more immediate impact is companies thinking about concentration and having concentration in one geography. I think the big learnings, you know, really starting back to the tariff changes and then pandemic and then, you know, the terrible war and situation in Ukraine, I think companies are a little bit more circumspective view on where they put their marginal dollar of investment and marginal dollar of, you know, having their sourcing operations. And I think for the first time that I can remember or recognize, companies are actively saying, I need to think about diversification and think about how I can diversify my overall global operation so I don't become too dependent upon one region or the other. And I think that's a reaction to supply chain issues starting to affect the top line of companies, not just the bottom line. And I think at the board level, that's when it gets their attention. Meaning, if supply chain issues mean I can't sell as much as I would, it means I could lose customers, I could lose brand. And obviously, there's a large transition of top line to bottom line. So I think it's more, in my opinion, the reaction to, I can't predict changes in a volatile world. I don't really like the fact that I'm dependent upon one geography. I need to diversify so I can become more resilient. Now, nearshoring will be part of that equation, but I think it's even a broader trend of, I just need to think about my global operations more globally with the eye towards resiliency and the ability to recover, which speaks to, I can't be concentrated in one geography.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Understood. Well put. This next one, Michael, is kind of a two-part question, and it's one that we definitely talked about when we connected in late March, just in terms of how retailers, I'm thinking about retailers when I ask this question, but obviously manufacturers too, how they've been sort of exercising cautious inventory management practices, given what we've discussed in terms of the drop of import shipment volumes, which are obviously still down annually. Since we've spoken, there was Q1 earnings announcements. And for example, Target and Walmart both indicated they're having better success managing inventory levels in terms of getting them closer in line with demand. So I'd like to hear your thoughts, not about those companies, but just about inventory management in general, given the overhang that we've been up against. And then part two of that, how does that sort of stuff impact the 2023 peak season? By most accounts, it seems like a lot of people do think there will be a peak season, but it's going to be far more subdued and maybe happening a bit later in the year. And I'd like to see if your estimates or forecasts match up with that.
Yeah, I mean, I think, the volatility you saw in demand patterns is becoming less volatile, meaning people's behaviors and consumer behaviors are returning to kind of a normalized trend line where mm-hmm. it can be more predictable. So you have to think about, how do companies really understand what they're going to sell in the future? And to do that, they have lots of data. And the more consistent the patterns are, obviously, the closer they can get towards predicting was going to be sold at any point in time, any place in time. And that obviously means that they're going to do a better job of getting inventory at the right levels for them to have, you know, not stock outs and not too much inventory. Okay. So the job gets easier when you have less, you know, volatility in consumer behaviors in terms of they start reverting back to, you know, normal, you know, normal kind of activities that aren't influenced by all of these external factors that are pretty, that change a lot. So I think it's totally consistent with my view that inventories will become, you know, more predictable, more in line. And I also think that companies have been spending a lot of time and money trying to use data in more effective ways and better algorithms to be more predictable. So I think it's a combination of consumers becoming more behavior driven, that's trendable, as well as better data and better tools to help them predict, you know, that. So it can get easier on both accounts. So that's totally consistent, you know, with what kind of what we're seeing as well.
Okay. All right. Great. Great. And, you know, I know we had talked about the pandemic at the outset of our conversation. You know, in terms of, and, you know, I hate to always harp on the pandemic. It's been front and center for so long. But, you know, does it really, did it help to really highlight, in your opinion, sort of the need for a resilient supply chain network? I mean, not only the pandemic that relates to, but also trade tension or trade wars, whatever you want to call it, as well as the supply chain, supply and demand imbalances. It's sort of all that trio in itself sort of screams for the need of resilient supply chain networks. Are you seeing shippers kind of get more focused on that approach, or is it?
Yeah, it's the number one thing. And, you know, one-time items can be dealt with as one-time items. And I think at the boardroom level, there's a recognition that in our, you know, geopolitical world, the one-time items aren't really one-time anymore, meaning these changes can come from multiple areas that may be unrelated, but they are happening on a more consistent basis. So I can't, you know, if I'm in a boardroom, I can't predict, you know, what the next big thing is going to be, but I'm probably convinced that there will be some next big thing. So, you know, you have to, you know, think about and prepare for, you know, the 10 things that could happen, but then be ready to adjust to the 11th or 12th thing. And the only way to do that is to have better infrastructure, more real-time data, you know, more connected supply chain, so I can adjust from time to time based on what I'm seeing happening. So if I have a concentration of all of my supply and manufacturing in one region, and one of the things that, you know, I want to protect against is being stuck if there's a problem with that region, then obviously the answer is make things and supply, source things in other regions. That takes time to set up. And I think, you know, big brand owners are really thinking about how do I set that up ahead of time, spread the work out, and then more importantly, be able to sense and adjust on a real-time basis so that I don't get hung up and stuck in one area or the other. And that investment is happening. It's going to continue to happen. And I think that'll make for, you know, better overall, you know, resiliency in supply chains overall. And I also think that the, you know, enormous, you know, economies and savings that are enabled when you have, you know, better data and better algorithms will continue to allow companies to have, you know, a more diversified supply chain, diversified infrastructure without driving up costs. So I that's the promise I see, is better technology means that I can be more diversified without having to increase my cost structure, because you have a constant downward pressure in terms of having less inventory, less expedites, and, you know, less people doing, you know, lower value activities and more people doing higher value activities, which then obviously reverts back into, you know, more savings down the road. So I'm actually encouraged. You know, it's been a really volatile and troublesome 3 or 4 years. But, you know, humans have always found a way to make good things out of bad things. And, you know, that's my opinion here, is that at the end of the day, the supply chains will be more resilient and more cost effective overall, because we went through all this, you know, really, you know, disruptive, you know, time in the past 3 or 4 years.
Okay. Yeah, no, great points. And just one more before we wrap up here, Michael, and it's, you know, just kind of you just presented it very well, given everything that we've been through in the last 3+ years here. Looking ahead, say if we were to speak a year from now, or next June, between now and then, what would you say are the kind of the biggest issues or topics with a supply chain focus? What are the three things, if you will, that people are going to be paying the closest attention to? In terms of the economic health, obviously we'll be in an election cycle. What are some of the things that you think will jump out from a supply chain perspective?
I think what'll jump out is the need for better, and by better I mean more complete, more accurate, and more timely data. Mm-hmm. Because the potential of artificial intelligence and machine learning is dramatically large. But all of those, you know, capabilities and all the learnings about how to apply, you know, more technology is dependent upon data. And I think that will be kind of what we see as kind of the next thing, which is, if I have great AI, it's awesome, but I need really great data. So if I have timely, complete, and accurate data, I can make the best decisions about the future to avoid problems in the first place. I think that's really where, you know, our most advanced customers and clients are thinking about, like, how do I get ahead of the curve by avoiding problems in the first place? Some of our clients, the ones that do that best are, you can see them because they have the most product when nobody else has it, you know?
Yeah, no, those are great points. And listen, Michael, this brings us to the end of our allotted time for today's podcast. So on behalf of Logistics Management Magazine and the Peerless Media Supply Chain Group, I'd like to offer up a big thank you for spending some time with us today.
Of course, and thank you for the opportunity to talk to your audience. I really appreciate it, and I hope everybody has a safe and happy summer.
Yeah, great. Thanks, and the same to you. And for those of you in the audience, if you'd like to keep up with what's happening with E2Open, please go ahead and give them a follow on Twitter, simply at E2Open. And also, please go ahead and give us a follow if you're not already. That is at LogisticsMGMT. And if you're not subscribing to our podcast, please just go ahead wherever you get your podcast and look for Supply Chain 24/7, and it should pop right up. And please go ahead and add us to your podcast list. So thanks, everybody. Have a great day, and we'll catch up with you next time.